you're 50 miles out. The weather is dropping, and the one airport you were counting on as your backup just went below minimums. What do you do now? I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to put you in the left seat of a scenario that has tripped up experienced pilots, not just students. We're talking about the moment your plan falls apart mid-flight, and how you respond in the next 60 seconds determines everything. Before we get into it, a quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. If you're working toward your private or instrument ticket, they make challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all of it. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's set the scene. You're a freshly minted instrument pilot. You've got about 220 hours total time, maybe 40 of that is actual instrument. You're flying a Cessna 172 from Louisville, Kentucky to Nashville, Tennessee. It's a November afternoon, and the weather briefing this morning showed Nashville with ceilings around 800 broken visibility 3 miles in mist. Not great, but flyable. You filed an instrument flight rules flight plan with Bowling Green, Kentucky as your alternate. Bowling Green was reporting 1200 overcast, 5 miles, legal, comfortable, you launched. Now here's where it gets real. You're about 40 minutes into the flight, you check the ATs for Nashville and it's gotten worse. Ceilings are now 300 overcast visibility 1 mile in fog, that's below the minimums for the ILS runway 2 right approach, which needs a 200 foot decision altitude and 1800 feet of runway visual range. You're already thinking about Bowling Green, so you pull the ATs for Bowling Green and your stomach drops. Bowling Green is now reporting indefinite ceiling, 200 obscured visibility, a quarter mile in fog. Your alternate is gone, now, right here. This is the moment I want to talk about, because what you do in the next 30 to 60 seconds matters enormously. And most of the mistakes that happen from this point forward aren't stick and rudder mistakes, they're decision-making mistakes. Let's walk through this together. The first instinct a lot of pilots have is to press on. Nashville is still there. Maybe you'll break out. Maybe the ceiling will lift just enough. You've come this far. The destination is right there. This is what we call planned continuation bias, and it is one of the most dangerous tendencies in aviation. The National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, has cited it in accident after accident. Your brain has already committed to Nashville. Changing the plan feels like failure. So you keep going, even when the evidence is screaming at you to do something else. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The best pilots aren't the ones who push through bad situations. They're the ones who recognize when the situation has changed and adapt before it becomes an emergency. So, let's rewind. You're in the airplane. Nashville is below minimums. Bowling Green is below minimums. What are your actual options? Option 1. You attempt the approach at Nashville anyway. This is legal if you've been cleared for the approach. There's no regulation that says you can't shoot an approach when the field is below minimums. But think about what that means. You fly down to 200 feet on the ILS, you don't see the runway, you go mist, now you've burned fuel, you've added stress, and you still don't have anywhere to land. Maybe the ceiling lifts on the second try, maybe it doesn't. Every missed approach costs you time and fuel you might need later. Option 2. You divert somewhere else entirely, and this is where a lot of instrument pilots freeze. Because the alternate they filed is the only alternate they thought about. They never considered what happens when the alternate goes away. Let me give you a practical tool. Whenever you're flying in instrument conditions, you should have what I call a rolling mental alternate, not just the one on your flight plan. As you fly along, you should be periodically checking weather at airports within a reasonable diversion range. Every 20 minutes or so, glance at the weather, know where the good weather is. In our scenario, let's say you had been doing this. You might have noticed that Clarksville, Tennessee, about 40 miles northwest of Nashville, is reporting 1,500 scattered 7 miles. Or maybe Huntsville, Alabama, to the south is wide open with clear skies. You have options. But only if you've been paying attention. This connects directly to what the Airman Certification Standards calls Aeronautical Decision Making, or ADM. On your instrument check ride, the examiner is looking for your ability to recognize a changing situation and make sound decisions. It's not enough to fly the approach well. You have to demonstrate that you can manage the flight strategically. Now let's layer in another factor. Fuel. You launched from Louisville with 4 hours of fuel on board. You've been flying for 40 minutes. That gives you 3 hours and 20 minutes remaining. Sounds like a lot, right? But let's do the math. A diversion to Clarksville adds maybe 20 minutes of flight time. If you attempt an approach at Nashville first, that's another 10 to 15 minutes for the approach and missed procedure. Then the diversion. Now you're looking at over an hour of additional flying beyond what you planned. You still have fuel. But here's the thing. You don't know if Clarksville will still be good when you get there. You don't know if you'll need to hold. You don't know if you'll need to shoot an approach. Every decision you make from this point is spending fuel that you might need later. This is the fuel trap. You have enough fuel right now. But every delay, every attempt, every extra mile is quietly eroding your margin. And fuel emergencies almost never start with someone launching with not enough gas. They start with a pilot who had plenty of fuel and then spent it making one optimistic decision after another. So here's what a good decision looks like in this scenario. First, you acknowledge the situation has changed. The plan you filed is no longer valid. That's not a failure, that's reality. Second, you communicate. Tell air traffic control what's happening. Say something like, Nashville weather is below my minimums and my filed alternate is also below minimums. I'd like to divert to Clarksville. Controllers are there to help you. They deal with this every day. They can give you direct routing, they can tell you about other airports you might not have considered, and they can coordinate your arrival at the new destination. Third, you commit to the diversion early. Don't try the approach at Nashville just to see. That's the sunk cost fallacy in the air. You know the weather is below minimums. The approach is almost certainly going to result in a missed. Save that fuel. Save that stress. Go to the airport where you can actually land. Fourth, you run your numbers. How much fuel do you need to get to Clarksville? Fly and approach, and still have your 45-minute visual flight rules reserve or your instrument flight rules alternate fuel if required? Make sure the math works. And fifth, once you're on the ground, safe, with the airplane parked, then you figure out how to get to Nashville. Rent a car, wait for the weather, call someone. The point is you're alive. The airplane is intact and the problem has gone from an airborne emergency to a ground-level inconvenience. Let me add one more layer to this scenario because this is where it really gets interesting from a human factors perspective. Imagine you have a passenger. Maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a family member, and they're expecting to be in Nashville for something important. A meeting, a family event, whatever it is. Now the pressure changes. It's no longer just your decision. You feel the weight of someone else's expectations. And this is where so many general aviation accidents happen. The NTSB calls it external pressure, or sometimes self-induced pressure. You don't want to disappoint someone, you don't want to look like you can't handle it, so you push into weather you shouldn't be pushing into. Here's the truth. No meeting is worth dying for. No family dinner is worth bending metal over. And any passenger who would rather you press into dangerous weather than divert safely is a passenger who doesn't understand what you're managing up front. Part of being a good pilot, and this is true at every experience level, is being willing to make the unpopular decision. The safe decision doesn't always feel heroic, sometimes it feels embarrassing. You land at an airport you never planned to visit. You sit in a tiny terminal and you wait, but you're there, you're safe. And the airplane is ready to fly another day. I want to give you a framework you can use for any scenario like this, not just this one. It's called the DECIDE model. Some of you have seen this in ground school, but let's make it practical. D, detect that something has changed. In our case, both destination and alternate weather dropped. E, estimate the significance. This is not a minor inconvenience, this is a major change to your plan. C. Choose a course of action. Divert to Clarksville or another airport with good weather. I. Identify what you need to do. Get a new clearance, check fuel, brief the new approach. D. Do it. Execute the plan. E. Evaluate. Is the diversion working? Is the weather holding at the new airport? Are you comfortable with your fuel state? Now I know what some of you are thinking. That sounds so structured. In the airplane, everything is happening fast. And you're right. You're not going to sit there and recite six letters, but if you've practiced this kind of thinking on the ground, in scenarios, in your chair at home, it becomes more natural in the air. The framework becomes instinct, and that's really the point of scenario-based training. You're not memorizing procedures, you're building judgment, you're rehearsing the hard decisions. When the stakes are low, so that when the stakes are high, you already know what good looks like. Let me leave you with this. The Federal Aviation Administration did a study years ago on general aviation accidents in instrument meteorological conditions. The number one factor in fatal weather-related accidents wasn't a lack of skill, it wasn't equipment failure, it was the decision to continue flight into deteriorating conditions. Pilots who had every opportunity to divert, to land, to turn around, and didn't. The airplane will almost always do what you ask it to do. The question is whether you're asking it to do the right thing. So next time you're planning a cross-country in instrument conditions, think beyond the one alternate on your flight plan. Know where the good weather is at all times. Set personal minimums that are higher than the legal minimums, especially if you're early in your instrument experience. And give yourself permission to change the plan. That's not weakness. That's airmanship. This segment pulled from concepts in the FAA Instrument Flying Handbook, the NTSB's studies on weather-related general aviation accidents, and the DECIDE model from the FAA's risk management resources. That's all from the traffic pattern. Head over to radiohangar.com if you want to dig deeper. Fly smart out there, and I'll catch you on the next one.